This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. In the meantime, though, we are turning our attention to the oil and gas industry because last week we did see some quite major moves. Several major companies suffered boardroom and courtroom defeats over climate change concerns. One example was that shareholders at ExxonMobil supported a tiny activist hedge fund in overhauling the company's board.
And then investors in Chevron defied management on a pivotal climate vote. And as well, we had a Dutch court order Shell to take more aggressive action to drive down its carbon emissions. The confluence of events shows the growing pressure on international oil and gas companies to set out clear strategies in accordance with the Paris Agreement, the Global Climate Change Accord.
So what are the long-term implications of these developments for the oil and gas industry? Well, for some thoughts and on other trends in oil markets, we're going to be speaking with Yong Liang Po, consultant at the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. Good morning, Yong. Thank you for joining us. So last week, in a first-of-its-kind ruling, a Dutch court found that Shell is partially responsible for climate change issues and ordered the company to sharply reduce its carbon emissions. What are the possible implications of this, not just on Shell, but global oil majors?
Yeah, thank you. So this was quite unprecedented. I think that, you know, we've not really seen this kind of event before. It throws up a multitude of questions. Well, I think the first thing to note is that, you know, the judge can make this kind of ruling, but it's far from certain whether this is binding. You know, after all, the company has many obligations, not just to the climate, but also to financial returns for its shareholders. So there will almost certainly be some sort of appeals, and, you know, the industry will be watching with a great deal of interest. But having said that, that there will be repercussions. The first is that clearly it shows that there will be more and more pressure on the oil and gas companies to have more concrete plans to decarbonize. So I think the amazing thing is that up to now, we have about eight of the major oil companies in the world who have announced net zero, and they have total production of about 18 million barrels per day. That is about 15% of global oil production. So these guys have committed to a net zero obligation. And I think what this means is that we'll see less capex going forward for upstream oil. Supply growth will almost certainly stall for these companies. And for several of the companies, they have already committed to reducing production in this coming decade. And so this ruling, I think, will probably accelerate those trends. And what we will see is that we'll see declining oil production, redirection of capex towards renewables, and hopefully this will create better returns for shareholders.
And, well, if we take a longer-term view, can these oil companies achieve zero-emission targets?
It would be quite astonishing. So when you say net zero, you know, there's many scopes of net zero, scope 1, 2, and 3, right? So I think scope 1 and 2 is your self-generated emissions. And that can probably be reduced to zero. You can get enough offsets to get that to zero. But how to reduce your scope 3, which is the product you're making, that to zero, that requires a bigger stretch of your imagination, because these companies will have to totally divest their current operations. So it will be a very long and hard road that we've not seen any company really manage to do this yet. There is one company in Norway, and that is the role model for companies to transition to net zero. This is a company that transitioned from a fossil fuel producer to becoming the biggest wind farm operator in Europe. So we think this will happen, but it will be very difficult to imagine doing it at the same time. Certainly a few companies could do it, probably not all.
Could we look at a time frame, maybe 10, 20 years? Like, is it foreseeable to see like even Exxon, a company, oil and gas major, to move towards a zero position? 20 years, 25 years?
Yeah, so I think we'll almost certainly have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. So I think companies in Europe, BP, Shell, Total, Repsol, they are very much further along the line of going to zero. And just because of the way they are positioned and they already have, extensive, downstream assets, they have gas stations, they have the entire network, they have petrochemicals. So all those divisions will enable them to make the transition at a smoother, in a smoother way. But companies, let's say, who are purely focused on just producing oil, those companies will probably have a more difficult time because, it is purely your core business and you have nothing else to fall back on. So I think there will be big, industry changes. A lot of consolidation is going to happen. A lot of restructuring will happen.
Now, moving on to tomorrow, they will be seeing an OPEC Plus meeting. What are your expectations out of the meeting? Do you expect them to relax production cuts?
I think they will keep the production increase, which they have agreed on. And I think that is to raise production by maybe 300,000 to 400,000 barrels each month in the coming months. They won't rock the boat because so far they have been very successful in getting oil prices to rebound. And I think the big question mark is what Iran does, whether the negotiations come through. On that, I'm a bit more sanguine. I think that the Iran oil will not come back immediately, even if the negotiation is successful. And I think more to the point, Iran oil has always been in the market and there's been quite a fair amount of smuggling and, all that. So I think what this happens is that it will just limit on Iran exports. It will be more transparent and you could even see prices go up because the Iranians will no longer need to offer a very steep discount.
Now, OPEC also expects a 6 million barrel per day jump in world oil demand in 2021, focused on the second half. Is this in line with your own expectations?
I think it's probably conservative. Oil demand is primarily a function of the very big countries, right? The US, Europe, and China. So what's happening in India today, India is about 4.5 million barrel per day of demand. It's not that significant. As long as the big countries continue on their vaccination path and continue to show the very strong rebound in economic numbers, I'm pretty confident that the demand will hit 6, if not more.
Meanwhile, Brent crude oil has rallied some 34% this year, now around $69 a barrel. Given expectations from the OPEC Plus meeting, a global economic recovery, and the prospect of higher Iranian output, how much more upside is there for oil prices?
Well, we are entering the summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and that's usually a seasonally stronger thing for oil prices. As you know, the famous US driving season. I think that could be in full swing this year. There are many refineries which were shut down since last year and facing technical issues. So we think that there could be some form of supply constraints, not in terms of oil, but some of the oil products. So very consistent with what we're seeing in terms of supply chain bottlenecks in almost every single major commodity. So I don't think it's going to be very severe. I think it's going to be fairly mild, but it does lend a little bit more upwards push to oil prices. Having said that, oil prices at around 70 is not a signal for the Chinese buyers to keep on adding to inventory. So that will slow down. So I think that it's quite likely we'll see the oil price continuing to inch up from here, and probably the 70 range is a good level.
Thank you for joining us this morning, Yong. That was Yong Liang Po, a consultant at the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, giving us a picture of what's been happening in oil and gas markets, particularly in the wake of some major news at the big multinational oil and gas players, as well as looking ahead to OPEC meetings as well. Right now, though, we are heading into some messages, and then up next, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute of Malaysia, on political developments amid this pandemic. So stay tuned for that after these messages, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.